Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and it's so lovely to have you here with us today. We are here to support and uplift and to encourage and empower you. We Uplift Radio is brought to you by the Whispering Energy Collaboration. And if you're interested in building your business in a spirit of collaboration and integrity, I would encourage you to stop by whisperingenergy.com. My name is Aricia LaFrance, and I'm a psychological marketing strategist specializing in helping entrepreneurs to really grow their business quickly while also cutting their marketing budget just by being authentic in the world. So to learn more, if you're interested in that, you can visit me at ariciaLaFrance.com. Today, I am feeling just enormously grateful and happy because I'm reconnecting with a woman I took a workshop with years ago, and it impressed me so much that I hung on to all of my stuff from that weekend for over 20 years. Patricia Lynn Riley is a graduate of Princeton Theological Seminary, and she's written a number of books, including I Promise Myself and A God Who Looks Like Me. But today we'll focus on a poem that she wrote that has impacted women all over the world, in China, Iraq, South Africa, and throughout the United States. Over 750,000 copies have touched the lives of women worldwide, inspiring, healing, and really affirming. And perhaps a teen said it best when she described what Patricia brings to our world. She said, "When I was a child, Patricia pointed out that I was prettier than the Barbie I was playing with. As an Asian 7-year-old, embarrassed by my race and facial features, that comment planted a seed of confidence in me. Patricia also sent me a card with the words, 'Be full of yourself,' on it. It reminded me that I must love myself no matter what. Patricia plants a seed of self-esteem wherever she travels." So welcome, Patricia. Thank you so much for being with us today on We Uplift Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm grateful to be with you and that we've reunited after all these years.
It is. It's really wonderful to talk with you. And I was wondering if you might be able to read Imagine a Woman. I think people need to hear this powerful poem and soak it up. And I know that we had spoken about maybe having, and I hope I'm saying her name right, Ramia Cody.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I actually have that up now. Would you like me to play that?
Oh, yes, I think that would be a wonderful reading of the poem for your listeners.
Okay, let me see if I can. Oh, there we go. We've refreshed and we've started. So hopefully people can hear this. Oh, see, something came up here for me. We always have these interesting things that happen.
We can invite folks to visit there after the broadcast, and they can always hear it at our site.
I think I have it.
There you go.
Can you hear that okay? Okay.
A little bit louder, maybe.
I think that's as loud as I can get it to go.
Mm-hmm.
You can just listen, and then we'll have Patricia read it to us.
A woman who honors her experience is not a story. She refuses to carry the sins of others within her body and life. Imagine a woman who believes she is
Thank you, Aricia.
That is just amazing. That is incredible. I'm really glad that
Isn't
we were
it?
Able to get that. That is amazing, just incredible. So, wow, it's giving me chills. So I would really encourage people to, if you weren't able to hear that very well, I apologize that the sound was not that loud, but to go out and listen to that yourself. Just close your eyes and just take, I mean, just a couple of minutes to really soak that poem in. It's at www.imagineawoman.com, and you can listen to that yourself. And wow, I'm kind of speechless,
yeah,
right?
Wow. We're very grateful to have Red Miller's voice and her reading of the poem greeting each person who visits the site. That has been my dream for a long time, to have her beautiful reading of the poem there for all of us to be inspired by the quality of her voice and her connection to the poem as it was introduced to her during a challenging season of her life. And she turned that gratitude and appreciation and love of its words into this beautiful recording that brings together her love of the poem and her absolute groundedness in the Navajo tradition, out of which she has become an award-winning recording artist. So I invite your listeners to Google Radmila Cody and find out all about her good work in the world.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful voice. Well, I was wondering if you could share some of the stories from women who've been inspired by the poem, because I was just in tears reading about some of the stories about how this has touched people's lives, men and women. You know, I read something that a man wrote to you, too, and just said, wow, this just really impacted me. But tell us more about some of those stories that you've heard.
Well, Aldo emailed me. He's one of the male lovers of the poem. And he shared that he was at a friend's house, and the poem, the book, Imagine a Woman in Love with Herself, was sitting on his friend's coffee table. And he picked it up and began to read it and then took it home and allowed it to inspire his own journal writing and wanted me to know that the poem touches men as well, and that it invited him to reflect on his own life and self-understanding and come to a place of greater love. So that was, you know, it's always exciting to hear that it moves beyond the audience that you imagine for your work. And then, of course, the poem has traveled around the world. It was read in South Africa on International Women's Day in 2006, and one of the lovers of the poem, Sandy Kalyan, is the house whip in the South African Chamber of the National Assembly, and she reminded them of Nelson Mandela's commitment to gender equality and the emancipation of women. She reminded those gathered that freedom can't be achieved unless women are emancipated from all forms of oppression. And then she read the poem to those gathered in the South African Chamber of the National Assembly. So we felt grateful that it has been used in Africa to support Nelson Mandela's commitment to gender equality. And just this year, this is the anniversary year of the poem. It's been out there for 15 years now. It traveled to Rwanda in partnership with Global Grassroots and Kula for Karma, two wonderful organizations doing empowerment work on many levels, including with women. And they worked with 100 genocide survivors who received T-shirts with the poem in English on the front and in Rwandan on the back. And the poem became the centerpiece of an empowerment process to inspire these women to create stanzas based on their own life experience and situations. Mm-hmm. So the poem tends to inspire creativity, you know, creativity, sort of doing something outside the box in the South African Chamber of the National Assembly. I'm not quite sure how often poetry is read there, but the poem inspired Sandy to read it in that venue where it may not have been done that often. And then in Rwanda, it inspired an empowerment process to support women genocide survivors. And then Radmela, being inspired by the poem to embrace the gift of her voice and to use it to inspire women and to use it in her work in the area of domestic violence. Just recently we received a communication from Ingrid Graham, who's a professional dancer and choreographer in New York mm-hmm. City. Her dance company is the Collaborative Movement Dance Company, and she has just about completed choreographing a solo piece based on the poem, and actually will be using Radmela's reading in the performance of that piece. Lisa Hammond, who maybe many of your listeners know through the catalog Female Creations, which was launched in 1997. Lisa was sent a postcard of the poem in 95 or 96 and wanted it in her first issue of Female Creations catalog. And it remained there for many years and was one of the vehicles by which the poem spread to a wider audience, as women would order a simple postcard with the text of the poem and share it with their clients, their friends, their women's circles, at their rituals and blessings, in their services and events. So we've been blessed and inspired by how the poem has reached out to women where they are, politically, organizationally, personally, professionally, and offered them a gift of inspiration, of creativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, beyond what you just said, too, the thing that really struck me is you sent me a couple of your books. And I think it's in the book, Be Full of Yourself. You talk about, and this is so powerful for me. I've been telling everybody about it, how women a lot of times we're asking ourselves, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And I need to do some self-improvement stuff, and I need to take a class, and I really need to work on this, and I'm so weak in this area. And just that question of what's wrong with me, what's wrong with me? And this poem, it looks at the other side of the coin. It's like, you know, what's powerful about you? Let's look at that. Let's stop looking at what's wrong with me.
That's right. And that book, Be Full of Yourself, was inspired by my own personal journey as well as yours of facilitating women's circles and hearing that question in so many forms and being, you know, just outraged by it, realizing that it wasn't our question and choosing to work with women in workshops to dismantle that question, what's wrong with me? It has an intellectual history. It has a socializational aspect to its formation within us, and it also has a personal aspect. And some of the first readers of that book, Aresia, were men who, when I would be on call-in programs promoting the book, they would call in and say that the book had helped them understand why it was that these powerful, exquisite women they were in partnership with, either personally or professionally, continually ask the question, what's wrong with me? Either what's wrong with this idea, what's wrong with my body, what's wrong with how I look, what's wrong with what I, you know, how I feel. And it caused confusion for them. And when they read the book, they understood the formation of that question within the girl child psyche, and it put it in a context that they understood. So even the words "be full of yourself," I think less and less so, are uncomfortable for women because we were taught not to be so full of ourselves. So to be invited to be full of yourself, to be full of who you are as a child of life, is really one of our missions at Imagine a Woman, is to remind all of us of the truth that we are children of life filled with so much goodness, so much to offer, and the only way to live is in that boldness, being full of ourselves, being faithful to the gifts we were given by life itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think so many women, and you talk about this in the book, they're always saying, I'm sorry, you know, oh, I'm sorry. Like, they're not supposed to be there. Like, it's an inconvenience that they are alive on the planet. I mean, that's putting it a little strongly, but I think that that's how a lot of women feel. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm being inconvenient. I should be invisible. I shouldn't have any needs. I shouldn't be sharing who I am.
And I think that's why the message is, as you said, that in this radio program, in this week's Women's Circle, in this week's experience within our relationships and our lives, imagine having no issues to work on. Imagine having nothing wrong to talk about. Imagine the content of our conversation being celebration and gratitude. And that was the commitment that we made in the 90s, out of which that book was written. We made a commitment to ourselves as a community of women that we would support each other to shift our language from a self-critical language to a self-celebratory language. And we literally supported each other to make that shift. So if we showed up at our women's circle and someone said, oh, you know, I'm working on my dissertation. I remember this story. It's in Be Full of Yourself. One of the women who came to our circles, she went on and on about why she just wasn't going to get her dissertation done, and she was wasting time, and she wasn't good enough, and she was her because of her family history, and she went on and on. We invited her to take a breath, and reframe her experience that past week and imagine saying, I'm so full of ideas that I have an abundance of raw material, which is true. She had lots of raw material for her dissertation. And in the fullness of time, it will be crafted into a shape that is appropriate to submit as my dissertation. So one way of holding ourselves, our breath is tightened and we lose our breath. The other way, which is a more self-celebratory, appreciative, holding and language, we find our breath again. It deepens. And I know that in my own life, that that level of reframing moves me in a moment, in a pivot from a suffering, you know, sort of a shadowy suffering to empowered awakening to this new moment.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I do a lot of work with acutonics, which is using tuning forks to tune to the vibration of different planets. And when we talk about the different planets, we talk about their characteristics. And we talk about Saturn being that constricted, disciplinarian. And it has a place. It has a place. But Jupiter being something that just is very open and expansive. And when you mentioned that about, you know, connecting with the breath, and kind of getting back to that and letting go of that constriction, it just reminded me of that. And for me, I think of Jupiter, and for the audience, whatever you need to think of that just allows that expansiveness, that creativity, that reframing and thinking of things in a completely different way so that you're not in that tight little ball where you can't be creative and where your breath is so constricted and you're not taking good care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I call that the pivot or the shift. It's been called by many names. I think there will always be distraction. There will always be internal swirls that are very seductive. There'll always be external swirls that seem seductive. There'll be habits of thought and habits of feeling and habits of response. And the pivot is that we notice them without judgment and we always return. We always return. We return to the breath. Many of us find that just in that conscious breath, we return again to the truth, to the breath, to the opening, to the possibility. For others, they make the pivot with a phrase. I have a client, a publishing client, who wrote a book, Stop, Breathe, Focus. And with her clients who were violent offenders, she taught them a process of pivoting when they felt that anger habit, that mechanism that led them to do violent things. She taught them to pivot with the word stop, breathe, focus. And she tells the story of several violent incidences that were halted in that pivot. So we all have our ways to pivot. I use the breath and connection to my body and a pause to descend into my inner life. We call that home is always waiting within the Imagine a Woman community. So home is always waiting. It is as near as a conscious breath. And that is our pivot back into the moment, reminding each other of the truth. And that's really why the poem was written, to remind us of the truth about ourselves when we forget.
Well, and I could see the poem being a huge shifting point for people, a huge way to help them to pivot and to reframe their whole life and the way that they think about themselves.
And I think that's, you've identified one of the primary motivations for the work, because what I began to realize in my own life is that my self-understanding wasn't just sort of natural and organic, that it had actually been imposed, and I had a choice in terms of how I understood myself, how I came to know myself, how I chose to hold myself, And it meant for me doing the work that's reflected in the books I've written to come to a place where I actually was able to choose a woman-affirming self-understanding. And the poem became that mantra, that that pivot opportunity to remember the truth about myself, ourselves, when we forget.
Yeah. Well, and what I would suggest to people, too, is going out to the site www.imagineawoman.com, and that poem is there for you to listen to, and what I'm going to do with it is I'm going to be listening to that each morning, just kind of to center myself and to get into that place to sort of reframe those habits of behavior and habits of thought into kind of a new form. So I would encourage people to do that with me maybe for the next 30 days or something. Just each morning, a couple minutes, go out to that site and just really soak that poem up and see how it changes your life.
Yeah, I think repetition is essential. And, you know, I grew up in two very conservative versions of Christianity. I spent my early years in a Catholic orphanage and then in Protestant fundamentalism. And those traditions were very powerful at including all of the senses in helping us to indwell a belief system. So when I went to Mass every day as a little girl, I heard the same words over and over again. I memorized them in the catechism. We sang them. We had the incense, which, you know, was our sense of smell being touched by that religious experience. We had song, so we heard that religious experience, you know, both spoken and sung. All of our senses were engaged. And the same experience in the Protestant fundamentalism of my early days. And we all know from a quantum understanding of transformation that we must do the same thing, utilize the same tools with different content, perhaps, to support us to come into a healthy and whole and wise understanding of ourselves. That means I listen to these words. You know, I read these words. I taste these words. I draw these words. So we have dancers dancing Imagine a Woman. We have artists drawing, you know, inspired by the poem. We have photographers gathering their photos that reflect the poem. We use all of our senses to use this tool among many tools. But for those for whom it works, this is a wonderful tool of transformation. And it requires, you know, consistency, as you said, you know, returning daily to the truth about ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, how can I'm sure that listeners are saying, oh, I want more. So how can listeners become part of the Imagine a Woman community? And what does that mean to be part of that community?
Well, this is the poem's 15th anniversary, and as a part of the celebration, we decided to provide an enhanced global platform for the poem. I consider the poem to be one of my creative children, one of my daughters. So this daughter of mine was romping the globe, and we felt like in honor of that transformational dance, you know, circling the globe with woman's spirit, that we needed to provide a global platform. And so the website, as your listeners will experience it today, is our gift to the poem in gratitude for its transformational presence. And it includes several ways that women can become involved in the community. And so I'll share with you a few of them. We invite women to claim their membership in the free worldwide community. And they'll notice on the homepage an opportunity for them to do that. And they receive as our gift, their first gift as a part of our community, is an e-course that I put together, basically addressing some of the issues that you brought up earlier in our conversation, the five steps on the journey from self-criticism to self-celebration. So if that part of our conversation touched anyone who's listening, you might go to the homepage of ImagineAWoman.com and claim your free membership in the worldwide community and receive those five steps in your inbox over the next 10 days to invite you and support you on your journey from self-criticism to self-celebration. So that's sort of a first step. If folks are curious and want to get to know the poem or had read it at some point and would like a deeper understanding of it. And then the next step, we offer retreats. We call them Remember Yourself Retreats, and we offer six of them. And they're very affordable. We design them so that they actually can be engaged in 15-minute chunks. We thought, okay, busy women, you know, how can we support and inspire them in the midst of their busy days? So each of the retreats invites the woman to return home to herself and reminds her of the truth about herself in 15-minute chunks in her life, to just give her that chance to take that deep breath. And they're called Remember Yourself Personal Retreats, and there's a page devoted to them. In fact, the homepage describes them, and then there's a special page that describes each of the six. And perhaps your listeners would be drawn in at that level. Then on a professional level, we have a growing team of Imagine a Woman coaches and facilitators. And we offer a certification program. So if anyone listening is interested in a very unique and powerful woman-affirming niche to enhance their already existing coaching practice, ministry, therapists, we have coaches who have therapy practices, who have coach practices, who are ministers. So we reach out to a wide range of women who are committed to women's inspiration and empowerment, and we offer an important certification program for them. So that's, you know, those are the steps. If you're curious, just take advantage of the free membership in the worldwide community and, you know, taste what the Imagine a Woman community is about. And then as you move along, you might want to try out one of the retreats and treat yourself and luxuriate in these words. And then, you know, if you would like to professionally enhance your professional portfolio and provide a unique woman-affirming set of programs and opportunities to your clients, check out the certification page. And then we have lots of Imagine a Woman. We have a poem postcard. We have a poem poster. We have Rudmila's reading available as an MP3. We have just a variety of audio resources and other resources based on the poem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's terrific. And when you're talking about the coaching part, how is the Imagine a Woman coaching kind of unique and different from other kinds of life coaching?
Well, first of all, it's stanza-based. So both the programs that women through our program are certified to facilitate and the coaching model we use that they are certified to use upon certification are stanza-based. We believe that the poem has a gift for women. And our stanza-based coaching invites a woman to bring to the coaching session a stanza of the poem. We put it this way at this site. I'm finding it right now. There's a gift for you in each stanza of the Imagine a Woman poem. Our certified lead coaches will assist you to unwrap the gift held within the stanza of your choice using our one-of-a-kind woman-affirming coaching model. The sessions are an hour long and lead women on a journey of self-discovery to unwrap the special gift held within the stanza of their choice. And we found that many women have a visceral reaction to one or more of the stanzas. And that visceral reaction is a powerful indicator that that stanza has a gift for them. And so our coaching model is designed to be stanza-based and actually a powerful hour-long experience that is based on the poem, that the stanza of the poem that a woman brings to her session. So literally, it's a Imagine a Woman poem-based coaching and facilitation model. That is what we have to offer the women's community around the world, is the poem. And held within it is a transformational process that it is woven into our coaching model and our facilitation programs. Does that make sense?
It does. It really does make sense. And the thought that I kind of got caught up in as you were talking was, I was imagining if every woman was able to hear this poem and really soak it into her being, I wonder what that would mean for the planet. Because when I'm looking at, like, you know, I came from being a psychotherapist into being a coach, and now I do psychological marketing coaching, which is really has to do with a lot of the habits of behavior and beliefs and hang-ups and all of that kind of stuff that we have around marketing. Because most people understand the basic tenets of marketing, but, you know, they have problems accessing that. They have problems being seen. They have problems, you know, letting their voice come out. And so when I think about women, and if we did not ask what's wrong with me and instead just affirmed I have these gifts to share with the world. I mean, imagine if Benjamin Franklin had said to himself his whole life, you know, I'm kind of a thrifty person and that's really wrong. I really need to work on that. And it's strange that I'm kind of whimsical about things. I mean, imagine if Benjamin Franklin had been, or Da Vinci, or any of these men had been as critical of themselves as women are, would we have any of the innovations that we have today? And think about how much we're wasting as women by saying to ourselves, what's wrong with me, instead of really putting ourselves out there authentically for the gifts that we have.
Yeah, it consumes a lot of our time and energy and resources. And I think the sad thing is that that question has intensified and become focused around women's bodies and their aging process. So sadly, you know, more and more of our energy is used to somehow shift and change what we imagine is wrong with us, whether we're 20 years old or whether we're 60 years old. We're using a lot of energy. Imagine all of that energy released as we imagine, and this is a lifelong challenge of mine as well, imagine a woman in love with her own body, who believes her body is enough just as it is, who celebrates its rhythms and cycles as an exquisite resource. Imagine that level of energy and how what we export, you know, from our culture that continually offers women around the world in loud letter, you know, in bold print, there's something wrong with your body, you need this and that and the other thing. Imagine if just that body criticism and scrutiny was released, and that our young women, you know, released to turn toward their awesome giftedness as children of life. One of the quotes that I love, and this really points to her upbringing, but Katharine Hepburn said, "It never occurred to me to doubt myself." Katharine Hepburn was, her mother was a feminist, an early feminist. So she grew up in a home where women were full of themselves. You know, her mother and father had a partnership. So what we see modeled around us, if we see our moms looking in the mirror and constantly criticizing themselves and changing things about themselves, then our young women are going to just, the message they get is there's something wrong. But if we grow up within homes where, you know, it never occurs to me to doubt myself because in this home environment I am supported in my mind and body and spirit to know that I am whole, perfect, and complete. Wow, what a release of energy on the planet. So, I mean, there's so much being done, but there's so much more that will be done as we release that self-scrutinizing energy.
Yeah. Well, I've for a long time, I have kind of held the belief that the whole diet industry and the whole, you know, you're too fat and you're, you know, you've got crow's feet and you need to do this and you need to have this surgery and that surgery and use stuff to make your eyelashes longer and, you know, just all of those different things. I look at that and that's really kind of imprisoning the potential of women. It's like, you know, no, focus on this, what's wrong with your body, instead of really putting out into the world who it is that you are. And when I've talked to people, when I've talked with women and worked with women, and I'll ask them, have you ever been on a diet? And they're like, oh my gosh, always, you know, and I've tried, and they go through the whole list. And I'll say to them, you know, is your weight any different? And they're like, well, no, not really. I, you know, maybe I've gained 5 or 10 pounds through all of this dieting. And I'll tell them, you know, what would happen if you just let that go and you just went ahead and did your life and you just, you know, rejoiced in all the gifts that you had and used that inventiveness and that creativity. And one lady, it was kind of funny, but it was sad too. She said, are you kidding me? That would be like pulling the ripcord on my thighs. I would gain 100 pounds if I stopped dieting. And, you know, I don't know if that's true for some people, but for a lot of people who have really taken that risk and gone out on that limb and gotten into the natural rhythms of eating what they feel like will nourish their body and feel like it's a, this is what I want to eat right now, this is what I'm in the mood to eat right now, and they get into those healthy habits of what they truly need, they're not gaining 100 pounds.
And I think from this is a tenacious challenge for so many of us, and a colleague and I were talking about the stanza of the poem the other day, and she lives in Colorado, and I remember she said to me one time, she was on the cusp of 60, and she was noticing various changes in her body, and she said that it was too exhausting, her self-criticism. It wasn't new to this season of her life. She'd felt it for much of her life, even when, you know, she looked like, you know, what the culture would consider beautiful. And then as she aged, it just continued. She said it was so exhausting that she just stopped. And she woke up every morning, and all she said was, I choose to accept myself today. That's it. Nothing else. And that became her mantra. And I remember when she told me that, I thought of the words, no matter what, because we had vow of faithfulness retreats in the 90s in California when I lived there. And we imagined a woman growing in knowledge and love of herself, of vowing faithfulness to her life and capacities, remaining loyal to herself regardless, And somebody said, well, what does regardless mean to you, Patricia? And I said, it means no matter what. So what would it be like, because it's so complex, and when we start talking about it, we can do the nutritional end, which you just talked about. We could, you know, we could talk about so many levels of this because it's such a tenacious challenge for us. But what would it be like if every time a self-scrutinizing thought threatened, because distraction will always be there, our pivot was, no matter what, that's what I say, no matter what, and then turn. And sometimes it's 100 times a day. Sometimes it's 2 times a day. Sometimes it's just such a flow in that radiance of being a child of life that all of that story falls away. So what is our pivot? What is our pivot? No matter what, imagine a woman remaining loyal to herself no matter what, enjoying foods from Mother Earth, enjoying activities, moving our bodies, enjoying using our bodies in service of our calling and mission. One woman said to me in a workshop, she said, I'm choosing to lose weight not because I'm scrutinizing my body, not because I think there's something, you know, inherently wrong with my body, but she said, at this weight, I can't breathe deeply enough to sing with the voice that life gave me. Now, that's a beautiful reason. She knew her calling was to sing and to chant. And she knew that the weight that she gained was limiting the expression of her gift. Now, that was a very empowering way, you know, to embrace a choice, which was to find a way to lighten her body and allow her breath to deepen so that her song could be full. So it's not that at times we aren't called to turn strategic attention toward an area of our lives in order to free us to do more fully what we're called to do, mm-hmm. but not from a place of there's something wrong with me chronically and I've got to keep this body, I've got to imprison it, I'm at war with it, I've got to master it, but from a place of how can I be healthy and whole,
mm-hmm.
in order to do what I am called to do on this planet, using the gifts and the capacities that life gave me.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what.
And I had, as you were speaking, I was thinking about Donna Hennies, who came on my show a while ago. She wrote a book called The Queen of Myself. And one of the things that she identified is that we have been told that we have these seasons of life that, you know, the maiden, the mother, and the crone. And all of those are, you know, it occurred to me, all of those are things where we are in service to other people. We're always serving other people. And she came up with one that was between mother and crone. She said, you know, I don't want to be the mother anymore. I'm kind of beyond that part. And I'm certainly not in a crone place yet. I'm going to be a queen. And the queen is all about really celebrating the self and bringing those gifts out into the world. So I was just reminded of that, and that we get to select the role that we play. It doesn't have to be something that somebody else tells us that we need to be or that we need to do, and we don't need to base our lives on the expectations of others.
Mm-hmm. And then there are many tools that support us to become that woman that authors her own life. And Queen is an example of authoring one's own life. For her, Queen, she's naming herself, and how important it is that we author our own lives as women. And for some, the Imagine a Woman poem supports them in that process. And it's the original 8 as well as the expanded version that over the years has grown. And your listeners can read the expanded version at the website as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in the retreats, the Remember Yourself retreats, and if they were interested in stanza-based coaching with one of our lead coaches, they would be sent a listing of the expanded version of the poem to invite them to notice that visceral reaction, the tears, the longing, mm-hmm. the fear, the celebration, and to bring that into a unique session that's designed to support us to imagine ourselves as that woman and to live in that yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm going to really encourage people to go out to imagineawoman.com because, like I said, I took a workshop with Patricia in probably the mid to late 90s in Minneapolis, and it made such an impression on me that I have, a place where I kind of keep my most special papers and documents and things like that. And I came across that recently. I was just kind of going through my files and reminiscing, and I just remember how wonderful that workshop was. So I'm going to really encourage people, please check this out. This is really incredible stuff, really amazing. As she said, the workshops that you can go to, they're very affordable. And listen to that poem. It's free on the website. Just listen to that each day and really kind of allow that to be your pivot point, because it will make a difference when you start to embrace your own gifts. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, Patricia, is if you could tell the story of the apple, because there is an apple on the cover of your book, Be Full of Yourself. So could you tell the backstory on that?
Sure, I would love to. Soon we'll be launching for Sundays a spirit blog where I will be bringing each week a blog for those interested in women's spirituality. The Imagine a Woman community is an inclusive community and includes women who name the divine in all different ways. Because I had been so schooled in a more conservative, fundamentalistic version of religion, I hadn't heard Eve's true story. I'd heard a story that had been shaped by others in Genesis. And when I was in seminary, I was interested in the very beginning, not the beginning that had been taught to me by religious systems that were designed by and for primarily men, but I wanted to reclaim the very beginning, and I learned that Eve literally means the mother of all living, and that the mother of all living obviously was a goddess, and that our earliest ancestors, when they asked where did we come from, they didn't say it was a male god who ordered the world into being by a series of verbal commands. They said it must have been the Big Mama who gave birth to all that is. And so the goddess was actually revered by her earliest ancestors. And when the rabbis began to put together, well, the oral tradition sort of grew up as a mixture of that goddess tradition, the goddess being revered and worshipped by the masses. And then as Genesis was written from the oral traditions, Eve was taken from that wider context, that wider story, being full of herself, being the mother of all living, and we all know what happened to her. She was sort of demoted in the Genesis story, and no longer was she giving birth to all that is. She was constructed from the male rib, so biological process was reversed. And I began to realize that the stories I was told were those stories were constructed for a purpose, and that purpose was to keep me in my place and to keep women in their place, and that the heavens were imagined as a male-dominated place, and as it is in heaven, so it is on earth. It trickles down. And so as I reclaimed Eve, the mother of all living, I rewrote her story as I learned about it. And that story, you probably read, Aresia, we worked with at that workshop in the late 80s, 90s. And we invite Eve to tell her own story out of centuries of misinterpretation. And we would, in the workshops that I offered in those days, we would end with an apple blessing and invite women to pass the apple one to another around a circle and to bite into life and the fullness of its possibility. And for some women, that was a very empowering action. For some women, it was very frightening because it was so opposed to what they had been taught about that bite of the apple. So it was a powerful moment for women. It was powerful whether it caused discomfort or whether it caused, you know, a yes. It was a powerful moment to reclaim Eve. And I believe that's what we're called to do. We're called to reclaim ourselves from the history that was written about us personally, societally, philosophically, intellectually, you know, theologically. We're to author our own self-understanding. And in that process, for many of us, not all of us, but for many of us, it has been important to reclaim the stories of women, the stories of women we heard over and over again in the churches of our childhoods and as adolescents that linger within us until we look at them and say, wow, Eve, the mother of all living, invites me to take and eat of the good fruit of life, to bite into my life and the fullness of its possibility, no matter what.
Yep.
Yeah. It was so incredible. And last night I was actually at my church doing a study. We're studying God and science, religion and science, and how those two can go together. And it's a very open and accepting church. And I was talking with somebody about the workshop that you did and that I was excited to have you on the show today. And I mentioned the apple, and it was so funny because somebody came around, they were passing out our little snack time, and they hadn't heard what I was saying. And they handed me this plate of apples. And it was just perfect. I thought, oh, how wonderful. Oh, that
beautiful.
It was really terrific. Well, I'm going to encourage people to go ahead and stop by your website. And one of the things that we did not talk about today, and I'm going to tell people to do this on your own, this is your homework, to also go out to www.birthabook.com. And we don't have time to go into it, but I want people to go out and visit that site as well as imagineawoman.com. And I just want to thank you so much for being here with me today. It was just really terrific to reconnect.
Thank you.
And I would like to, oh, yes, and I would like to close. This is something that you sent, and talking about the things that really resonate for you. You sent this song to me recently, and it was so healing and so uplifting that I just want to leave everybody with this thought, and that is, your healing task is not to become a new, improved, or changed person. Rather, it is to heal into the present by reclaiming your natural and essential self in all its fullness. In the very beginning, you loved yourself. Please remember that and embrace the feminine divine dancing within your heart. Blessings,
yes.
Everyone.
hoping to find my way home. I once believed in a place at the end of the rainbow, destination complete, but I know now the journey's the answer to the truth that we see. Midnight blue, the miles worn and weathered, this suitcase of dreams sought the fading denial. Sweep the open road, elation and fear are dancing together, the rhythm of thoughts in my heart as I wave goodbye to the demons' compromise. Welcome a brand.